This is Ozarks at Large. The election season has been over for a week, but the analysis continues. Ruby Rock from our content partner Talk Business recently sat down with political bloggers Jason Tolbert from the Republican perspective and Michael Cook from the Democratic point of view to analyze the outcome of elections in Arkansas.
Let's begin with what I think was the biggest story of the night, and that was the numbers in the Arkansas State Legislature. The Democrats lost the Senate. The Republicans appear to have won the House, not necessarily by the large margins that were predicted. So this was supposed to be a blowout win for the Republicans, and it really was not that big of a blowout. Why was that?
Well, it was a big win, obviously, in the Senate, as you talked about. They have 60% of the seats over there, 21 seats. There were four other seats they were very close to winning. They were within 2 points of winning, so it could have been up to 25, but it ended up being 21. The House really was where it was a lot closer than people expected. They won by an extra point instead of by two touchdowns. So it was still a win, and looks like they're still going to have the majority, but it was a much tighter margin than everybody expected it to be.
An ugly win, a moral victory for the Democrats, ugly win for the Republicans.
Right.
Is that all right? I mean, I seem to talk to Democrats that did not seem as discouraged as I thought they'd be.
We're not as discouraged because we can easily take the House back in 2 years. All we need to do is net two seats. That is easily doable. I mean, for months, Republicans have been talking about, oh, we're gonna take the House, 62, 65, even 70 seats, and then to barely win. A lot of people have egg on their face on the Republican side. Now, of course, they still do control the House.
Right.
So, I mean, you're right. Ugly victory is still a victory nonetheless. But it shows, you know, we've talked about a lot on this show and on our blogs. Would 2012, would it be a paradigm shift election, meaning Republicans take control and dominate for many, many cycles? Or is it a pendulum swing where maybe Republicans win, but the Democrats can have a way back into victory? And I think this is one of those pendulum swing elections where Democrats didn't do so well, but we had everything thrown at us, from millions of dollars from Americans for Prosperity, Obama being unpopular in the state and dragging some Democrats down. But yet Democrats were able to squeak out a lot of victories that shocked Republicans, and that was a good night for
us. Some of that environment may not change, though, in the next 2 years, and so was it a pendulum swing in your mind, or was it a paradigm shift, as we were talking about before the election?
Well, I believe it's still the continuation of a paradigm shift. I think what you're seeing in Arkansas is voters now generically identify more with the Republican Party on a generic basis. But what you saw is that the Democratic Party organization is still a stronger organization than the Republican Party. Republican Party is still a young party and still has a lot of growing to do, and the Democratic Party did a good job getting its voters to the polls. You also saw in the House, I believe it was 10 Democrat incumbents in very close races that ended up winning. And so even though it was a big Republican year, it wasn't necessarily an anti-incumbent year. And you saw some Democrats, particularly in the House, that effectively campaigned as good, doing a good job and managed to keep their seats, albeit by small margins, but necessarily they said we were doing a good job and voters gave them their seats back. And so I think those two things really combined to make it where it was a lot tighter margin than people anticipated.
What do you think tactically? What were Democrats doing tactically? You were running some of those campaigns.
Well,
what was going on?
Well, before I talk about that, I mean, again, Jason and I have a disagreement in terms of if there was an election where Republicans could have just destroyed legislative Democrats, 2012 was it. I mean, they had the money. They had Americans for Prosperity spending $1 million or more. All these outside groups. They had Barack Obama, who was was a drag on the ticket, and yet they still couldn't knock us out of the ring. So that would be my first, but we have just a friendly disagreement. It was a pendulum swing. But secondly, in terms of tactically, Democrats were smart. They got smart this time. In 2010, they got caught flat-footed. Mm-hmm. They were unprepared for the unpopularity of Obamacare and the president and got wiped out. This time, you know, a year and a half ago, we got together and started talking about how do we plan for the future? And so, you know, things like Governor Beebe raising a bunch of money and you know, giving a bunch of money to the state party, to organizing their lists, their databases to make sure we're targeting the right voters, to frankly, you know, opposition research. I know Jason and we've talked about this on our various blogs, mm-hmm. but that is a fact of life. Somebody's public record, and I say public record, is fair game. How they vote, do they pay their taxes, those things, you know, Democrats smartly used every tool they had and played every card they could, and that is why it was so close in the House. The Senate wasn't as close as we'd like to be, but still in the House.
Do you see Republicans taking a a page out of that playbook in 2014 going forward? Do you see them having learned some lessons from this election cycle that, hey, maybe we need to do a little bit more on our ground game?
Yeah, I think so. And I think Michael is right. I mean, I think you saw a very well-funded, very well-organized campaign from the Democratic Party. I think they spent close to $1 million on opposition research. And not only doing the research, but coordinating. How do you use that? Which races do we use it on? How do we use that effectively? And in the very last few days, last week of the campaign, we really saw some of that come down in a very effective way. I think Republicans would be wise to learn from some of the organizational things that the Democrats did. And you're right, I think 2010, I think they were not expecting it. 2012, I think you almost had Republicans expecting it, and then it didn't quite pan out the way they expected it. So you almost kind of had a little role reversals there this year.
They got a little bit overconfident.
Yeah.
I mean, for months, we've talked about it. Republicans, oh, it's over. I mean, this election is over. We're taking everything. We're crushing it. And then, oops. I mean, they did win. Don't misunderstand
right.
me. I'm fully mindful of that. But it's just barely. I mean, a few more, just two races has gone differently in a different story in the House.
Let's talk about what became a big issue at one point in the campaign, and that was dealing with the three Republican candidates who made very controversial writings that became public. Loy Mock and John Hubbard, their writings about slavery. You had Charlie Fuqua, some very controversial comments. Did that spill outside of those districts in your mind?
I don't know if it spilled outside of the districts. I think you did see it hurt some of the candidates that were competing in the same areas, such as Linda Collins-Smith. I think she was probably hurt by some of that controversy. She was in the same Senate district as the House district was, where Charlie Fuqua was. I think as tight as that race was, you have to think there was some effect there for her. But I do think it really affected those three races in a dynamic way. I think that if that had not happened, Hubbard and Mauck certainly would have both won their seats. They would have been returned to the House. And I think Republicans were expecting that they would have won anyway. But I really think we learned that voters might be paying closer attention than we think they are. I think they were paying
attention.
Give them
that much credit?
Yeah, I really think they were. Okay. I think they were paying more. I think we thought that most voters were really keyed in on the presidential race and not looking down the ballot that hard. I think they were paying a lot closer attention to these state house races than we thought they were.
And I think we would all three agree, pretty proud of the results of those voters actually recognizing some of that controversy and maybe making a moral statement in their votes in that respect.
I think so. I think it would have been a problem for Republicans if those candidates had been elected and come into the House. They would have had to deal with those candidates for the next 3 years. That probably would have been the story the next day. And I think those candidates would have felt like they got returned to the House with sort of a mandate to continue. And I think it would have been sort of an albatross around the party's neck.
Well, also this episode shows a couple of lessons in my mind. First of all, the Republican Party leadership still frankly backed Hubbard and Mock and Fuqua. I mean, they said, we're not sending them any more money, but they never said, do not vote against these guys. They were counting on what I call the Three Stooges getting reelected. So the Republican Party leadership had a real failure in moral values, I believe, and still supporting these guys, number one. Number two, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but, you know, blogs and social media were the ones that broke the story in the first place. So Max Brownlee of the Arkansas Times broke part of it. We at Talk Business broke the other part. If that had not happened, it might not have ever come to the surface. So that kind of, again, classic example of how the new media, the social media blogs have an impact on elections. And we'll see what happens in the future.
Let's talk about now what happens in terms of the legislature. Governor Beebe said that he expected bipartisanship in the GOP-controlled legislature just more than anything else, I think, because the numbers are somewhat close. It's going to require that. Is this just wishful thinking on his part?
I think some of it is. He's hopeful that it'll be bipartisan. I think we're already seeing the opening stages of continuing what happened last session happening in this session. The Senate obviously has a much more collegial attitude. I think you saw that reflected yesterday when they met to organize, and you saw a Democrat, Senator Wyatt, got up and nominated Michael Lamoureux to be the incoming pro tem, a Republican, and they unanimously elected him as the new pro tem. Whereas over in the House, you're starting to have kind of some squabbles as to how that speaker's chair might get handed down. So I think that dynamic is going to continue as it did in 09. I think it's going to continue again in this next session, where that the Senate and the House have a very different dynamics in how that partisanship plays out.
How do you think the Democrats did handing over the keys to the car?
I thought it was a friendly transfer of power. I mean, it's kind of what we expected. And what I expect to happen is that for the next few weeks and maybe the next couple of months, it's going to be pretty quiet for the most part. I mean, legislative sessions are very slow getting started. What I think probably happens is that they get there in January and they're started feeling around a few skirmishes, but I think there'll be some big battles coming in right around early February and then for the rest of the session. So I think we're in for a very partisan, a very hard-fought session, which, look, for what we do in terms of talking about writing about politics, it's fun, but we'll see if it's good for the state or not.
Well, we saw that in 2011. If you remember, the first few weeks was very slow. Hardly anything happened. I think they debated whether we were going to live stream meetings for like a couple weeks before they ever actually started getting to the
issues. That's just historically what they always do. It sort of takes a while to get going, and then they start doing it.
It'll be another slow snowball, I think.
My sources tell me that there may have been some more aggressive plans if the Republicans had gotten some of these stronger majority numbers that they were planning to put in place. Do you think Republicans maybe pull back a little bit because of this and moderate a little bit of their agenda?
It's interesting you say that. The Republicans were, part of their problem was they were overconfident. I mean, their polling said we're going to win 65 seats in the House. So they were doing things like, we'll decide what staff stays in the legislature. They were telling lobbyists, you better not give any more money to Democrats because we will not forget this. So they were frankly threatening lobbyists with retribution if they gave to Democrats. So they were really kind of feeling their oats before they had the oats to feel in the first place. And now from what I've seen, they're still in control. But now it's more of a, we better walk a bit of a tightrope. So that's kind of encouraging to see. Maybe that'll force a little bit more bipartisanship. But because, like I've said, weeks and weeks ago, they're too overconfident, it came back and bit them.
What do you think about the moderation? Do you sense that they're going to be moderate, or do you think that there are going to be some issues where there's just going to be some party line votes, capital gains taxes, voter ID laws, things like that?
There's definitely going to be some party line votes. The dynamics is going to be weird to watch it play out. Governor Beebe has always enjoyed working with the Senate more than he has the House. But this time, he actually has a bigger minority, a stronger minority in the House than he does the Senate. So will that sort of reverse where Beebe now sort of switches and works more with the House, or will he continue to work with the Senate? I don't know. But there's definitely going to be some conflict between the legislative branch and the executive branch. How that plays out, neither side will probably be able to get that much.
And let's not forget, you mentioned Governor Beebe. One thing we have not seen in previous sessions is the power of the veto. And which bills will he decide to veto, if any, and that will the legislature decide to override those? I believe it takes a majority.
Just a simple majority.
So that'll be interesting to see what happens. Does Governor Beebe, does he decide to veto certain bills? And does it get overridden, back and forth? This is going to be interesting. We've never seen anything like this.
Of course, I think the veto power is going to be a little bit decreased this time. In the past, if the governor vetoed it, his own party would have to override that veto. And sometimes, your own party doesn't want to go against you as far as that. This time, the Republicans could override all his vetoes.
Sure, exactly. It just takes a majority.
Political bloggers Jason Tolbert and Michael Cook recently spoke with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business about the recent elections in Arkansas. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks. More information at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon Communications store near you or online at VZW.com/smallbusiness. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. Ask Me Another. Coming up, we'll mash up the plots of classic Hollywood films. The Princess Bride of Frankenstein, anyone? And we'll break it down with this week's mystery guests. Let the quizzing begin on NPR's Ask Me Another.
Ask Me Another, Saturday at noon here on KUAF 91.3 FM.